Delighted and welcome, everybody. Glad we get to step up to the plate one more time as we look into this ancient Aramaic physics, physiology, psychology, and genetics understanding that the Greeks turned into theology. So it's an awesome thing to separate those things out into the truth of what was going on, what was being spoken of, and to, in particular, understand the practical aspect of the tools. Literally, from the point of physiology, from the point of physics, it all ties together. You know, people talk about metaphysics as though there's another world or something that's the metaphysical, but there's no such thing as a physical world. If we listen to Einstein on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. There's only physics. There isn't physics and meta, meaning beyond, something beyond physics. It's all just one energy system. When we separate it out, we create an artificial separation. And then we get to live in, as Einstein says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. And so we want to correct that and bring forward the tools for bringing our perceptual minds, our perceptual constructs into harmony with the actuality, the truth of what's going on. So it's an awesome and exciting project, and we're delighted you're here to be part of it. And Miss Jean, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet on this end, but I do see a young lady on the switchboard that I think you were expecting a call from her.
So I can Jamuna?
Turn on, yes, so I'll turn on 808.
Hey, young lady.
Jamuna.
Hi. Hello.
Hey, welcome. How are you, young lady?
I'm pissed off.
Oh, really? You got an opportunity to learn forgiveness.
Yeah.
What's happening?
So.
What's your mind blaming it on?
Well, my mind's blaming it on that I have a racist neighbor that thinks they're better than me because they happen to have lived in the neighborhood for 50 years, and I'm just supposed to put up with their dog barking, even though I let them know how I feel. So, and I'm supposed to move, don't you know? You know, I've been here for a few years. I literally just got saying this just a little while ago. I mean, we're on, well, it feels racist. I mean, I could be wrong, but it just feels like every day she goes to the gym, yeah? And she comes back, and at about 5:40 in the morning, the dog has to bark because she's coming home. And I said, you know, is there any way you can not have the dog bark at 5:40 in the morning? And I don't know. It just seems to me like she says, like, oh, well, the neighbors, you know, they understand there's noise and this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, well, you know, people at that time are, like, sleeping. They might wake up or they're meditating, you know. They don't want to have to have a daily thing with the dog. So, I mean, I was good, and then this happened. So this is a good forgiveness opportunity.
It is a powerful forgiveness opportunity. Here's my input.
Yeah.
Here's my input. You're not pissed off with your neighbor, and you've never been pissed off with anybody in your whole life. However, there's a part of you that holds this energy you call pissed off, and you could put it into your neighbor and the dog, or you could put it into your former or your future or somebody on the other side of the world. I mean, you can, your mind can put that into anything, and then the tendency will be to have a conversation about that thing into which you put that part of your own mind, or you can collapse that projection and start to confront that energy that you call pissed off that sounds like you're not enjoying very much. I mean, have you ever had that kind of energy moving in you before?
Oh, yes.
Well, you've got it again. You've got it again.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to be finished with it, you know, moving that energy out of your field, literally, I'm just going to talk about physics now, you know, every energy that we hold sets up a field. You know, if I throw a rock into a pond, I can see the waves move from the pond. I used to keynote at a conference called Global Science. This goes back about 40 years ago. And Global Science, they presented all kinds of, you know, high-level physics-type stuff. And one year we had a gentleman named Marcel Vogel, who was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. And that year, Marcel, and this guy, the kind of mind that Marcel had is when he was 11, he invented chemical light. He was a kid, and he's very science-oriented. And, you know, if you go to a football game and you buy a light stick, it's a plastic stick, and inside of it are some glass tubes. And when you bend it, glass tubes break, the chemicals are released, they mix, and all of a sudden you've got a light. That was Marcel's invention at 11. Marcel's family didn't have the money to patent his invention. At 11, Marcel patented his invention. The reason you and I are talking right now is we have a thing called hard drives. Marcel invented he worked for IBM, he invented the magnetic coating that allows hard drives to store information. The particular presentation that Marcel did was on a thing called a Delaware camera. Delaware camera is different than your average camera. Most cameras, you click the shutter, the aperture opens, light energy comes in, and the light energy is registered on the photographic plate, and you have a picture. But the Delaware camera has a tuning mechanism in front of the aperture. So if you tune the tuning mechanism to a particular frequency, if that frequency is there when you open the aperture, that's what's going to show up on the photographic plate. So what Marcel showed us was pictures that he took of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Very much like drop the wave or the rock in the water, you watch the wave. Everything that moves in your mind creates a high energy wave. And the purpose of life, when you recognize that it's through those high energy waves that we create, the purpose of life is to respond and to bring us energetic patterns that mimic or reflect or resonate with the rock we've dropped in the pond. So if I hold a pissed off part, I mean, in order for me to be aware of it, energy has to move in me. Anything that moves creates a wave. And what happens is, my take is that we're not designed to have pissed off energy in us. It's actually a toxic energy for physiology. And the purpose of life is to heal us. And so what I've noticed over the years, what I've come to understand, is life is relentless, that if we hold in energy that's destroying us, then life is going to send us through resonance somebody who's going to bring that up, or something, maybe even a dog, or what I consider to be a nasty neighbor. So the first order of business is I clean up that energy in me that produces that wave. Now, in many, many, many cases, the dog's going to stop barking. That whatever it is in the world, you know, we had a gentleman on, it was about 3 weeks ago. I don't know if you happen to be on that show. A gentleman from Mexico was on, and he was sharing a situation around a relationship with whom he had a daughter. And he's trying to arrange to see his daughter, and he's written to his former weeks ago, and she won't respond. We walked through a worksheet, and he just got some monumental shifts out of that worksheet. And I shared with him, and this was not a psychic prediction. It was just a result that I've seen over and over and over again. I said, I wouldn't be surprised if before the day is out, you get a response to your email. His now current spouse has been trained in this work and has done a lot of still point breathing work. And so once he did the worksheet, we closed the session out, and I suggested that she breathe him. Well, I don't know what was an hour and a half later or so, and I get a text. Guess what? I just finished breathing him. Guess what? His former wife responded to his email. Now, again, that wasn't any psychic prediction on my part. I just watch over and over and over again, and this is what the world calls a miracle, but it's not a miracle. It's physics. You know, we're creators, and you know, my take is that the most horrendous atrocity that's ever been done to us and that we bought into is we've had in from us the fact that we are by nature creators. You and I are creative beings. And, of course, everybody loves that idea when the creation's rocking along and doing really well. But when it's not rocking along doing really well, don't we know whose problem it is? it's always them. I mean, virtually every one of us, by the fact that we were brought up in this insane Western culture, is by the age of four, a card-carrying member of the one-world universal religion of blame. And the mind attaches whatever disturbance it has to whoever it is in its field of awareness that it can put that energy into and blame them for it. So I invite you to really dig out the worksheets, do some forgiveness, and let that go. You might see that change, or rather than see that change, you might find a way of speaking to this neighbor that invites or results in the neighbor's cooperation rather than the neighbor saying, oh, too bad, you know, it's just part of the game. Because that too is part of the creative process.
How's the, can you explain? Like, you mean like me creating it? Yeah, because I'm the creator, right?
Yeah, through resonance, like, I create everything that comes to me. I'm a part. It's like I'm not separate from what happens in my life.
Yeah.
And when I take that level of responsibility and I see, oh, here's the energy with which I'm creating this. You know, in essence, if I hold the disease of being pissed off somewhere in my tissue structure is literally in the process of aging, what the people call aging, and decaying. And so out of that energy that I hold within that tissue, an energy emanates. And the energy, I like to call it the creative wave or the high energy wave, and that's what Marcel Vogel was taking a picture of. And that creative wave says, hey, world, I've got this pissed off part with which I'm killing myself. Would anybody do me the favor of coming along and showing it to me directly so once again I can get an opportunity to become aware of what I've hidden from myself and heal it? And when I heal it, oftentimes they'll change. Not always, but oftentimes they'll change. And there's a wonderful, actually a two-pronged test in the Course in Miracles that you can apply to determine exactly where you are in terms of your process. The first part of the test, it's the easy part. The second part's a bear. The first part of the test is, when I think of anyone, I can put a check mark in that and say, yes, hey, that's huge progress. But then the second part of the test is, and I can't proclaim that I've passed this one fully yet, but the second part is, and when they think of me, do they share my perfect peace? That's the level of responsibility a creator has to take.
So how do you know what they think?
Well, it's none of my business, really. It's just a way of recognizing, oh, I got somebody raging at me. Then there's a part of me engaged. There's a part of me involved. And I mean, gee, this person's raging and a danger. They're a danger. I need to protect myself. I need to take care of myself. And as I'm taking care of myself, and taking care of myself might mean picking up the phone, calling the police if somebody's going that bizarre, or it might look like moving out of the space. But as I move out of the space or pick up the phone, I wanna do the work of cleaning up the part of me that draws it in so that I don't have to draw it in again, because here's how the universe works. It comes along and gives us a little tap on the shoulder. If we don't listen, if we don't change the energy, then it comes along and it gives us a little, you know, punch on the shoulder. And then it moves and moves and moves until it's it's the cosmic 2x4, whacks us upside the head. And if we don't listen to the 2x4, it becomes a 4x8. Sooner or later, the universe gets our attention, and we either destroy ourselves and die, or we clean it up and live.
Yeah.
And when you realize that we live in a world of physics where literally we're all connected, I mean, literally we are, there is only one of us, the eye, as Einstein offers, he says it's an optical delusion to think you're separate. You know, you're way over there in Hawaii and I'm way over here, and we go, well, we're obviously in totally separate spaces and, you know, nothing we could do could impact each other. But the truth is we are cells in one body, and our eye tricks us, perception tricks us into this idea that we're separate from each other and that we can't impact each other. But, you know, in terms of the text that we interacted with last week, And I offered the thought of extending love in your direction. And I mean literally, when I say that, I'm tapping in inside of me to the presence of me, of my energy of love, and consciously, purposely sending it in your direction. And we can literally make a difference in each other's lives by supporting each other that way. And, of course, the opposite is true. When I extend the energy of anger or disgust or resentment or what have you, then I'm having a different impact. I get the original, a different impact on my own physiology and a different impact on the people around me. If you go to Yeshua, and you know, in the Aramaic language, the word law is not even related to what the Greek language presents as law. Our culture is totally oriented to the Greek ideas in many arenas, and the idea of law is the rule of a superior. Some superior, whether it's the court or the king, or made up a set of laws, or God, and if we don't obey, then there's going to be punishment. That word has no resemblance to that in Aramaic. In Aramaic, it's just, how does it work? So they ask this man, Yeshua, what's the first law? In essence, they're asking in being a human being. Now, the Greeks tell us that he told us to love our neighbors as ourselves.
Yes.
Not even close to what he said. Doesn't he? I mean, if Yeshua sat in a church and listened to a preacher say that, he'd say, that's all Greek to me. What he said is, and we'll give you the long form of it, in Aramaic, we would, you know, somebody who's listening with Aramaic brain cells would understand. He'd say, when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, you need to have rachma.
Yeah.
And by so doing, you will maintain your human life. So it wasn't love God, love neighbor as yourself, but it was maintain rachma for God, for neighbor, and by so doing, you maintain your own human life. And rachma, it turns out, is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that does two things. One, it's a gateway. When the gate is closed, that is, if hostility or fear is active, there is no human life active in that human form. We say, oh, there's a human being. If love isn't present and active in a human being, this is not a human being. It's a human form to be the active presence of love for there to be a human being in there. So he's saying, if you want to maintain your human life, then you have rachma for the Creator and neighbor. And by so doing, you keep the gate open where you actually live as and function as the active presence of love in your life.
Rachma means love in Aramaic, am I correct? Sorry about dropping my phone.
Well, we've got to be careful with that, because then if we go back to our Greek brain cells, we'll start saying silly things like, I love you.
Yeah.
And I don't love you, and I'll never love you, and I hope you never love me. And God doesn't love us, and we've never loved anyone, and nobody, but the whole culture, the whole Greek culture is going, I love you, I love you, oh, I want you to love me, and it's all a fraud. Again, you know, the man who's probably responsible historically for more deaths on planet Earth than any human being ever is Vladimir Lenin. And he brilliantly observed, if you change a culture's word, meaning of a culture's words, you can destroy the culture.
Yeah,
love does not describe something we do to each other, something we get from each other, or something we give to each other. The word love describes the state of being we were each created in. And it is our responsibility to maintain that state awake, alive, alert in us. And hostility or fear obliterates it. So it's not about loving each other. And people go, well, you know, I said, what's the difference? It's like, so what? You know, well, if you went to a doctor and they said, well, there's a problem with your circulation. It's in the epithelial cells or well, maybe it's in the, you know, the more the surface skin cells. It, you know, it's something like that. And I said, well, what are we going to do? Well, we'll treat the epithelium. Well, we'll treat the epithelium. Well, and I say, well, wait a minute. Which one are you going to do, doc? Well, they're pretty much the same. So, you know, does it really matter? Yeah, it matters a whole lot what you do. And I'm not going back to that doctor if he doesn't know which we're going to do.
Yeah.
And if
exactly.
I don't understand, you know, Yeshua talks about the power of words, because human mind is primarily operated by words. He says the power of life and death is in our words. We can engage in the frequencies of death with our words and literally kill ourselves. And that's what the culture's been doing for how long? How much hostility or fear runs the game? And so the work of Yeshua, which, you know, most people don't even want to think about or don't want to touch, is you need to take responsibility for what you're doing with your mind. And you need to learn to remove hostility and fear so that the true active presence of love lives in you. You're not going for the cheap copy of trying to get somebody to love you, which is really, for most people, is a venial form of approval. It really means I want you to approve of me. And someone who misuses the word love to describe something I'm going to get from you or give to you or do to you or you're going to do to me leaves the mind with an unachievable goal. You know, a lot of people live and you know, as they go through life, they come across this frustration. It's just like, why am I so frustrated? What's going on? Well, when you assign the mind a task that is impossible because you've misused a word, you just created a cycle of frustration that's going to take over and run your life. And if you're trying to love somebody and you're trying to get somebody to love you, the end result is that level of frustration because it's impossible. And the mind just keeps going, I keep trying. If only they would, if only they would. I need to correct the way my mind uses words, so that I can get back on track. Oh, the objective isn't for me to love you. The objective is for me to function as my newborn essence, conscious, active, present love, and functioning from that, thinking from that, speaking from that, to actually function as a human being. Holy crap. You mean, Michael, I've got to go in and clean up every bit of hostility and fear and rage and guilt and drama and trauma from my physiology, from my generations, in order to be free of it? Yeah, that's what I mean. That's the work of Yeshua.
Yeah.
There's an interesting passage I refer to it all the time, and there are a bunch of disciples that get together with Yeshua, and they, in essence, they say, hey, man, what do we need to do in order to please God? And Yeshua tells them, he tells them in the form of a parable, and literally half of the disciples that were there turn away and say, too hard a saying, who can understand that? And they leave, and they never come back. And they make up a so-called religion about Jesus who's going to save everybody. And they leave behind the work of Yeshua. And then you listen to Yeshua, and he talks to those people, and he says, why do you not do what I tell you to do? Many will come calling my name, Jesus, 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 and I won't have anything to do with them. You need to do what I said you need to do. There's a work to be done. And that faction who didn't want to do their work have made up a whole story. Well, there's nothing you can do anyway because you're just a hopeless, helpless sinner. And so many people are trapped in those words, in that insanity. So we're in this work, we're about restoring the original Aramaic understanding of those words and the tools, the how-to of Yeshua, to return to that space of really, truly living as human beings and hitting a critical mass where literally the whole world has an opportunity to wake up to the truth of who we are.
So, Doctor, you're saying that it's like the breath, to come from that conscious place within me, like the kingdom is within, like not getting into the words, but coming from the essence is what you're saying.
Exactly. That's the whole core of it. And when I'm not, I've got work to do. I've got work to do, and what my carbon-based memory mind, my perceptual mind will tend to do is to blame that work on somebody else. Blame that energy moving in me. Look what you did to me. You made me mad. You made me sad. You made me afraid. And then, you know, if you take the Greek solution, the Greeks will say, well, if they made you so mad, then all you'll have to do is forgive them. Just let them off the hook because you're mad. Mm. So what happened? So I let you off the hook because you resonated anger in me. Have I done anything to change my anger? No, my disease is still there, and it's going to carry on. Forgiveness is how I go inside myself and remove what never belonged. The Greeks substituted pardoning for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's nice, you know, if you did something like your neighbor, it doesn't sound like they're very considerate. So if you chose to say, I'm going to pardon you, okay, I'm going to let you off the hook for that. That's really pretty nasty, but okay, I'll extend love in your direction and I'll let you off the hook. And now I realize that all this pissed off energy in me that comes up when your dog barks at 5:30 in the morning, it's about me. And so I'm going to breathe. I'm going to go inside myself. I'm going to apply forgiveness and remove that energy. And guess what? You're laying in bed and you're sound asleep at 5:30 in the morning, and all of a sudden you become aware of this dog barking, and because you're a creator, you recognize, oh, there's an energy called barking dog. I can transmute and breathe into that energy, and actually, I can set my mind so that when it's 5:30 in the morning I hear a barking dog, it puts me into a deeper level of sleep. And now the barking dog puts me to sleep. Because I'm a creator, and I create with whatever energy comes to me. So I get deeper sleep because the dog barks, because that's how I've chosen to create my life. Does that make sense?
No, and yes.
Yeah, of course, yes, the non-being, my wife say, no, don't tell me that crap.
What I'm trying to get to
in our heart of hearts, we know it's true.
How do I practice that? I just become, join with the dog, in my heart?
Well, that would be one way of doing it, is to extend the presence of love. Actually, we were doing an intensive in a kind of a backwoods area in Florida. This was back probably 12, 14 years ago. And there was a gentleman there who was a runner, and he'd go out and run every morning. And he shared with us that he had gone on his run, and he'd gone down a street. He hadn't, he'd been there for several days. And this one day, he went down this street, and all of a sudden there's a, I don't even remember what kind of a dog, but one of the ones that's known to be pretty vicious. And he said, this dog is just tearing at me with his teeth going like he's going to tear me to shreds. And he said, we had just done in the intensive, the love exchange. And he said, I knew I could not run this dog, so I just took a breath. And I did a love exchange with the dog. And he said, the dog just instantly quieted down. And he's like, wow. And then he kind of got into a little bit of fear mode again. The dog started baring his teeth and coming after him again. And once again, he was able to center himself in love, connect, and the dog, he just walked away from the dog, and the dog did no more, nothing.
So how do you exactly do this love exchange? I mean, I know you talk about that. I think my mind's not allowing me to actually get it.
Let's do one. This is one of the tools we teach in our intensives. So what I'm going to ask everybody to do, and if we would, I don't know where people are. We may have London, England. We may have Sweden on. We may have Poland on the show. I don't know. But wherever you are in the world, I'm going to ask everyone to just join us in doing this exercise. So I'm going to start by closing my eyes. I'll invite you to do that. And you close your eyes so that the mind can be more focused, get rid of the visual distractions. It gives you more energy to dedicate to directing your own mind. And we're going to invite everyone to tap into the deepest, clearest love that you can. Now, one of the places I suggest people go is the moment when they first held a newborn. If you don't have a newborn experience to go to, it might be your kitten. I know that on occasions I've loaned people what I go to. I've loaned them my story. 43 years ago, my daughter was in the process of being born. We purposely set it up so that we birthed our kids at home. And I was catching her. as she came out of my wife's womb. Her head landed in my hands. She opened her eyes and looked at me. Now, they tell us that a newborn can't focus their eyes for several days. That's not true, at least it wasn't for my daughter, because my daughter laser focused into my eyes and she grinned at me. And she literally sent me into a state of love and connectedness that I didn't know was even possible till that point. Into that energy in you. That's who you are. And let yourself focus there as you breathe. And then think about this audience that is all over the globe right now, or think about a person in particular. Maybe there's someone you've got a challenge with. Maybe your neighbor. In this case, it might be useful to do it with your neighbor and with her dog. So as you really tap into and breathe into that space of connectedness, imagine that you open your eyes and there's your neighbor with her dog beside her. And you actually literally extend that presence of love in you to your neighbor. You extend your essential nature outside of your form into the space of that neighbor. And as I'm doing this exercise, and notice if there are any places, and I'm saying this because I just noticed it, that there was a little bit of tightness just kind of above my nose, behind my forehead, that I wasn't aware of till I kind of settled into this place. So the first place I'm going to go is I'm going to focus on softening that space just behind my forehead, above my nose, and extending that energy all the way to Hawaii, to you. And all the way to Poland, where probably Sandy's on, because she usually is. And I'm going to extend that energy to England, where Yinka is likely on the show today. To Peter in Sweden, and Susan up there in the Northeast, Chuck and Maga in Missouri, and Jeannie and Aria Rain in the room in front of me, and if Sarah's on the phone, we just finished doing 3-day intensive. Who's playing to listen, so she's driving, Sarah, extending that love in your direction, that energy. And for me, what happens as I do that right now, it's almost visual for me right now that as I've done that, and actually this is the first time I've had this experience when I've done this exercise, but it's almost like my visual field has expanded in all those directions that I just imagined that variety of people was. It's kind of strange. It's a new experience for me. I've done this experience, this exercise many, many times. But it's almost like my visual field, my eyes are closed, but my visual field's expanded. And what's happening for you?
Well, I actually am seeing my neighbor and her dog in front of me, literally. I'm just feeling into the energy of seeing what you talked about your daughter. At least they may. And seeing the eyes of that newborn, like, and seeing it in them, like, seeing that same kind of essence that I see in that baby, like, I'm just visualizing a newborn baby,
It might not be the way you start it, but I'm seeing a newborn baby and
that's,
seeing the eyes
yep.
just step at me and just seeing those eyes in them, even the dog, because the love essence is there with the dog. And I can feel a shift in me. And, you know, I almost have this kind of melting away and this feeling of like, I'm sorry. I'm not, but not from the place that I did anything wrong, but like seeing how the energy in me used them to just to piss off.
Sweet. Can you imagine? You know, you listen to Yeshua, the physicist, and he says, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. Can you imagine the day when enough humans do exactly what you just did, that together we create critical mass? That's what Yeshua was talking about. He wasn't talking about a loaf of bread. A little leavening, that's the just the little bit of shift that's needed in order for the whole of something to change. Imagine the morning that the energy you just touched into and brought into the world on a new level, that enough people are doing that, that that energy connects and literally creates an energy field that makes that shift for every mind, heart, and being on the planet. That's what Yeshua was talking about, critical mass.
I think that eventually, like, the work you're doing, Doc, and or Doctor, and what Yeshua came to start from the ninth mark is exactly what you just spoke about.
It's what we're here to do.
Yeah. It's bound to happen.
And I, in particular, am so deeply appreciative of the fact that Yeshua had the brain cells to understand and explain to us how to access our own unconscious dynamics through forgiveness and remove those unconscious dynamics, which is what you just did. And it's by bringing the active presence of love to the trauma energy. Love is to trauma what sun is to a puddle of water. It evaporates it, literally. It is an energetic transmutation that takes place. And, you know, this goes back better than 30 years ago at Heartland, and I can remember, I'm teaching this, and I'm working to understand on deeper and deeper levels. And we had an intensive, and there were probably about 50 people in the room. And there was one person who was in a particularly traumatized way. And, you know, at this point, I don't even remember what the tools were. I don't remember what the details of it were. But but I can remember that they made this the same. Like, I could hear the shift in your voice. And in this intensive, this person went from, like, an extreme state of trauma. It wasn't just a story about a dog. It was, like, some extreme dis-ease-type trauma into that connected space of love. And, you know, there were about 50 other people in the room, and they're the only one that made that shift. And I'm going, what? What is the deal here? What is it that's at the root of healing? And the reply that I got, and I, for the first time in my life, I understood what it takes to heal. And that is that that trauma energy that we've been hiding from ourselves, that's in the unconscious, has to surface. Now, of course, that happens all the time. 5:30 in the morning, the dog barks and it happens. But what makes it a healing moment is that love is conscious, active, and present in me at the moment when the dog barks and my pissed off part comes up. When what's hiding in the unconscious peeks its head up in the presence of active love is dissolved instantly. And that's the core of healing, and that's how forgiveness works. And that's the kind of breath that releases the next level of the energy. That's it exactly. That's Rukka Dukkha in action. What you just did with your breath spontaneously there, that's Rukka in action that we talk about. Rukka Dukkha.
Yeah.
the feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors. And don't be surprised if you start getting some new insights into truth, because the other part, when we really tap into and allow that energy of breath to move in us, this is, in Aramaic, literally a feminine elemental force in us that, one, undoes the effects of our errors, and two, teaches us the truth. Don't be surprised if you start getting some new insights into your world, your life, what's going on for you. Because when Rukh becomes active, that's what happens. And that breath is exactly how she becomes active.
Yeah.
That's what was spoken of in the creation story when it said, it didn't say God sent out his spirit. It was God sent out Rukh, his breath.
That's beautiful. I can feel that. For sure.
Got it. I'm feeling it with you. And that's what the still point process is all about, is reaching the place where the breath is moving to the point where it starts to move in me without my effort. There's a whole passage in the Course in Miracles that speaks of that, of Rukh moving in you, and here's what it says. Without your effort, she will go before you, making straight your path and leaving in your way no stones to trip on, no obstacles to bar your way. Nothing you need will be denied you. Not one seeming difficulty, but will melt away before you reach it. You need take thought for nothing, careless of everything, except the one purpose that you would fulfill. And that purpose is guaranteed because it rests on you, a daughter of God.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you brought that up, Dr. Race, because I actually was just talking about that passage the other day with another Course in Miracles person. And that was, I don't know why, but it's perfect that it came here. You spoke it again. No coincidence.
No coincidence, that's for sure. Yeah, and I've read that passage and I've repeated that passage 1,000 times. And thank you for what you're moving and what you brought up, because for me, it energetically went through me on a whole new level. Like my whole structure went into goosebumps as I was speaking, in like the whole new level for me. So thank you for that.
No worries. I felt like, to be honest and to bring it up, because if I hide it, there's no hiding. I don't know.
Paul had that one right. He said, nothing will remain hidden. Everything will be made known in the light of day. And the way it's going to be made known is it may show up as a barking dog.
Yep.
Or you know, 1,000 different events.
Yeah.
And when I'm willing to take responsibility for what's moving in me, then in the presence of active love and breath, I can transmute that energy and be freed of it. It will be undone. It will be removed, evaporated from me. So breathing with you. Jeannie says sometimes on the show that when something starts resonating in me, and I'll take a deeper breath, she says I sound like Darth Vader. But
thank you, Dr. Ray.
Absolutely delighted. And it's Michael, by the way, please.
Okay, I'll call you Michael, okay.
Yeah, please do.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, actually, call me anything but late for dinner, but Michael's good.
That we won't call you late for dinner.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
Awesome.
God, I hope others
awesome.
Got the gift as well. I'm sure they did.
I suspect this has been a gift for everybody. Sure has been for me, and I suspect everybody's listening to get a gift out of it. So, nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. Any other thoughts for you today?
I don't have any more thoughts. It's just I have this worksheet printed out, I see them right now, so I'm definitely going to take a look at them again and do it.
Cool, cool. And, you know, it took me about 35 years of teaching the core of first century Aramaic forgiveness before I understood why would I do such a silly-ass thing as cancel a perfectly good, loving, wonderful goal. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. At least it didn't before I understood how the human mind worked. But now, and I mean literally, it took me 35 years of working with it full time to understand why and how it worked. And just to put it in a short and sweet term, in step one, you're laying out, you're describing a perceptual construct of your mind. And you remember in the Course in Miracles, on the lesson, What is the World?, says, the world is false perception. It is born of error. It has not left its source. It will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. The world, or perception, is a world made up by us in order to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. So when the Course is talking about forgiveness in the world, it's talking about collapsing perception, the constructs of the mind, the things that come from carbon-based memory, the body's mind, the generational patterns. And put that together with the Harvard research. Back in the 50s, psychologists did research at Harvard, and what they came up with was, you know, they're hooking people's brains up to electrodes, and they're measuring brain cell firings. And in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells were firing, that's about a 25th of a second, what they determined was the max amount of data that went into conscious awareness, the max amount of data that was used to build our perception of the dog and the neighbor or whatever, in that time frame was 9 bits. Tiny, tiny little bit of information compared to everything that's moving and firing in us. So perception is this 9-bit mind, and its construct that tells us what's supposedly true.
Yeah.
And if you recognize that that's a false world made up by you, what do you have to do? You have to get that thing out of the way. How do you do it? Well, you've got to understand what drives it. This is the piece that I finally got after 35 years of working with it and going, oh, now I know why I'd cancel a perfectly good goal. Because every time I load it in my mind, it drives my mind to use some form of hostility or fear to create the world that I see, to create my perception. And so the goal is a driver for the construct of my mind. I want to collapse that sucker because I'm using that to void what is actually in the creation for me. So I cancel the goal, not because I don't want it, not because it's anything wrong with the goal, but I recognize that every time I load it in my mind uses some kind of hostility or fear to produce the world that I see, or I think I see, the world that's painted on the inside of my eyeballs. So when I cancel that world, when I shebag in Aramaic that goal, that world collapses. And when it collapses, just like when the 9/11 towers went down, they dropped into their own footprint. When I cancel the goal, the perceptual construct of my mind drops into its own footprint, and now I've got access, direct access, to that which is in my unconscious that needs to be healed.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. It's genius. So, you know, thank you, Yeshua, for having the brain cells to bring that to the world. And, you know, it's sad that the Greeks turned it backward and turned it into pardoning, but I'm sure glad it was there. And I, for one, personally, just in terms of my own personal process, feel so just deeply, deeply grateful for the fact that, wow, somebody actually understood that and handed it to us. It's pretty awesome.
He is the way shower. He is the way shower.
Yep, absolutely. And you go to that passage in the Course that that defines forgiveness precisely the same as it's defined in the Aramaic, although I never saw it in the course until I had the brain cells to see it from the Aramaic. And I've never found anybody working with the course that can tell me how to forgive. I've never found anybody in 50 years, almost 50 years of working with the course, 45 maybe. I've never found anybody that can tell me how it works. But when you go, it's right there in back, I think it's lesson 336, eighth paragraph. Mm. It's there, just so simple. Here it is. Let go all the things you think you want. Your trifling treasure, your goal, put away and leave a clean and open space within your mind for Christ to come. There it is. There's forgiveness right there. Exactly as it is in the Aramaic. It's got nothing to do with me letting anybody else. I don't forgive my brother. I don't forgive myself. I don't forgive God. I don't forgive Hitler. I don't forgive, none of that. I look at the goal that's driving my perception. Step one, I lay out the perceptual construct of my mind. Step two, I go into willingness. Yeah, I'm willing to go through this. Whatever's at the root of this pain, I'm willing to embrace it and allow it to come forward for healing. Identify the goal that's driving that perception, which I outlined in step one. Step four, I connect to that conscious, active, present love. I go back and hold my daughter's head again.
Yeah.
And then I cancel the goal. Perception collapses. I ask the breath, I ask Rukutukutcha to move in me, because, I mean, if this is something that's been going on in my bloodline for 100 generations, how with a 9-bit mind am I ever going to figure it out or move through it? Just not going to happen. But when I ask Ruka, hey, I'm going to turn this over. I don't know what to do with this. Will you take it? And I invite her to move, then the movement starts. And that's forgiveness.
Jai. Yeah.
This Aloha.
This is amazing.
Same as the word rachma in Aramaic.
Yes.
Aloha, Aramaic. I think the Hawaiians are one of the lost tribes.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah.
They're amazing. Yeah.
Yes, for
Thank
sure.
Thank you so much, Michael.
All right, dear heart, you have a blessed one. Appreciate you.
Love you, Gene. Well,
it's been a great conversation.
But
say again?
Sending my love to you. I was like, do I love Jeannie? I was about to say, I love you, Jeannie. But I'm going to say, I'm holding space and love for Jeannie and Michael and everyone.
Thank you.
You're
received
welcome.
And returned. And think of everybody in between us and you who gets touched with that energy as it moves.
Yes. Thank you.
Joining you in that. All right. Blessings. Happy Resurrection Day. You just did Easter right there in that love exchange. Awesome. All right, Miss Jeannie, we're down to about 6 minutes, I think. 5 minutes, maybe.
You have 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Well, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in chat room? Anything for you to add to that conversation? That went to some
awesome.
Places I wasn't expecting it to go, but it was pretty sweet. We'll have to make this one of the special shows.
We actually taught the love exchange in Aria's classroom. And I've put in the notes for today, not just the link to a poster that we have on the love exchange, but there's also several videos about that different people have done on eye gazing. Amnesty International did an experiment on it, eye contact. So there's several links in the notes for today that people can check out as well.
Awesome. And actually, let's share the story about this was probably 19 or maybe 2003, we were doing an intensive at Heartland. And I mean, this love exchange is something I've taught from the beginning of this work. And there was a young lady there, if I remember correctly, she was probably about 9. Am I remembering correctly, Jeannie?
She was 11. She was 11.
Was she 11? So we're doing the love exchange, and she came up with the idea of, she's doing it, and she was guided to put her hand on the heart of the person she was doing the love exchange with. They're doing this eye to eye, and took their hand and put their hand on her heart. And so she added a whole other level of love exchange when this child of 11 just intuitively said, you know, put her hand out on the person she was doing the love exchange with and asked them to put their hand on her heart. So I hold my hand on my heart, and I extend my heart to your heart in opening this space of critical mass where 7.5 billion people wake up with their hands on their hearts, knowing themselves as love, and choosing to extend that love to every family member, every friend, every enemy, to every other person on the planet. It'll be really cool to be alive as that happens and we hit critical mass and the whole world starts to function as humans. Pretty awesome. So thank you for sharing this space with us, breathing with you, opening my heart to embrace you in my love, and opening my being to receive your embrace. And breathing with you. Thank you for joining us.